We're about to light up season 3 of Drifter's Sympathy on Feral Audio. Episode 1 is called Dawn of Individuation, which rolls the clock back to right when you decide who you want to be and the kinds of early decisions that, for better or worse, completely mold the rest of the shape of your life. And episode 2 is going to be called Loner Legends, sort of an attempt to define who the underdog really is and their role in history and culture and art. Season 3 drops on October 23rd. This is Emil Amos. Check out Drifter Sympathy on feralaudio.com.
Seriously, we gotta fucking go, man. We're gonna be fucking late. Sit. What are you doing? Come on! You said you were
on your way.
Hey, I'm just gonna jump in the shower real quick. Is that cool? Just real fast. All right. Hey. Nothing beats an echoey laugh. Isn't that the truth? Isn't it the truth? It is the truth, right? Isn't that? It is what it is, and it is what it shall be, and everlasting, therefore, thereon, and you got it. At the end of the day, all things being equal, penny for a pound, when the dollar's down and you've got the money and the Wrangler, I'd say that when it counts your chickens where they hatch, you're going to have some chips that are going to fall where they may, and it is what it is, in the end, all things being equal. At the end of the day. That's pretty much all I wanted to say, really. You know, just those are some ideas that I was thinking about, and I thought I'd like to share them with you here on Twisting the Wind. Just caught the D in the echo there. Just the D. That's all you want. Echo that D, because the shape of the D is a natural, you know, it's got that nice bow, that nice bow and arrow bow, shooting out into infinitus. Infinitus. It's probably a brand name that it's going to sue me.
Hey, you can't say my name. Hey, did you just use a Bank of America trademark slogan, keep the change? Hey, guess what? We at Bank of America have copyrighted that. Yeah, keep the change. It's ours. Oh, what's that sound? It's the sound of my ass being sucked by my mouth. Yep. How are you doing? I'm a bank. Sorry. I just got a little pissed off there. Nothing gets my goat. Man, I wish I knew what that meant. I mean, I technically could stop down right now and hit Google up and find out. Spend like a good 10 minutes maybe finding out what get my goat, what it means. But that would involve doing that, and I'd rather just speculate, you know? Like, all I can think is that maybe there was a time when goats meant more than they do now. A goat. And if you get someone's goat, it really hurts them. But it doesn't hurt them, really. It doesn't. Oh man, I don't know. I just tickled myself by thinking about what gets my goat means. I'm crying right now. I'm crying from tickling. Oh yeah, well that's what gets my goat. Is corporations copywriting phrases. You know, I mean, it's not long until like Wells Fargo cop, they have the new Wells Fargo It Is What It Is program. A dollar's a dollar in the new It Is What It Is program from Wells Fargo. Come on in and suck your own dick in the Wells Fargo parking lot. It is what it is. With 15% cash back and all purchases up to $25. It is what it is. Trademark Wells Fargo. Oh! Savings and loan. It is what it is. Well, trademark, registered trademark. Registered, God, that's going to fall away soon, isn't it? I think it will be. Because what's going to happen is, maybe not soon, I mean, like, maybe in my lifetime, maybe when I die. I think I've got a good 40 years left. I feel like unless there's an accident that happens, which, you know, it could happen right now, someone could drop an ample out of a DC-10 and it would land on my head here. I do have something over my head, but it would land on the thing over my head and it would crush me. So I don't know if that could happen. Accidental death is always possible. But, you know, I think I got a good 40 years. And I think in that 40 years, I'll probably see the end to frivolous copywriting of things that are not copyrightable. Copyright my fucking face, you Jaguars. That's a good thing to call someone if you want to confuse them. You mother fashion Jaguar. Oh, are you some kind of Jaguar? Is that what you're doing here? What do you mean? I'm just a person. I'm not a large, rare hunting cat. Yeah, you are. You're a fucking Jaguar, okay? Okay, listen. I don't want any fucking Jaguars coming to this goddamn party. Understand me? Look, we gotta hire someone for the door. I don't want some fucking Jaguars getting here. Got it? I don't want any fucking Jaguars. I don't want these fucking faggot Jaguars coming in here. I would love to call this episode Faggot Jaguars, but I just think that's probably not going to happen. That is a beautiful sounding bunch of words. What is that? It's faggots, six letters, and Jaguar, I believe, is the same. 6 and 6 is 12. 12 is divisible by 2. It's a great number. Faggot Jaguar. Oh, I guess Jaguars is what makes it, if you pluralize that. So, because, you know, what's one gay Jaguar, right? I don't even know if faggot even means gay in this sense. I don't think it does. I think it almost never does anymore, right? That's kind of gone away. I mean, it has, hasn't it? It pretty much has. So, What is it? What do those words even mean anymore? They've been so transmuted into, they've been ground into a fine powder that who knows what the fuck they mean. You can make anything out of them now. Yeah. Watch some TV and watch some South Park. They'll tell you about it. Okay. Well, look at here. Okay. You're listening to Twisting the Wind. I'm Johnny Pemberton. This is an episode that it's going to be, I can't even tell you. I can't tell you. I always want to tell you, but I can't because that's how I like to do it. But there's a person on this podcast today who is, this is it. This is like I should just stop. I should probably stop after this episode because it's not, this is going to be the pinnacle unless something really bad happens. But I don't think it will be unless the anvil, the literal anvil, the Acme anvil falls on my head and I die. But thank you all for listening. Thanks for all the kind words. Thank you for rating and commenting on the podcast on iTunes. That is actually important. I don't know why, but there is some sort of massively complicated algorithm that is also in the shape of a kinetic motion machine that helps when you feed it in this energy of comment and rate, that it makes everything better. And some people come to my house and pat me on the butt until I say stop, if you do that, which is, I'm okay with. I don't dislike it. I think it means I like it. So thanks for listening. Keep listening. Share it with your friends. Share it with your mom. Share it with your brother. Share it with your dad. Share it with your sister. Share it with your uncle. Share it with your aunt. Share it with your neighbor. Share it with your friends at the garden who you go to. You can put this on while you're gardening. Probably not. Because gardening is kind of a nice thing to concentrate on. And honestly, lately, I find myself drooling when I am in the garden. I am drooling because I'm so immersed in like, oh, what's going on with this little seed? Oh, I just drooled. Thank God I'm over a patch of dirt and no one else is around. Okay.
Hey, Johnny, will you talk about some music for just like 20 seconds, bro? God, you know, I came all the way down here from Temecula. Jennifer won't even return my fucking calls, all right? I just want to hear some tracks, bro. Play me some tracks. Play me some tracks, some tracks, some tracks, some tracks, some tracks, some tracks. Some tracks. Some tracks.
Okay. Good sounds right there. Hey, this is the musical section of Twisting the Wind. Gotta make it brief. Gotta make it fun. Gotta make it feel real good to you. Sound good. Gonna get those sounds blasting to the ears here. Okay. Okay. Talking about here first. This is a weird band. I don't really know much about them. They're pretty underground, so to speak. This is a guy, and his name is Charlie Megira, M-E-G-I-R-A, and he has a band called, in this instance, The Modern Dance Club. He's some Israeli guy with a lot of teeth, and this album's a couple years old, 2008. It's called Love Police. This track from this album that is off, it's from an album called Love Police. It's a great, it's so fucking amazingly good. It's a two record LP, comes in this nice packaging from their own label called Guitars and Bongos, which I think this is their first release. And it's so cool. It's such a weird amalgamation of all these different things that come together. And I'm going to play one track, obviously, but it's impossible for me to sum up this album because it's all over the place. All these different sounds. So I'll play one sound that I think kind of gets down to it, and it's pretty ripping. It's called Beneath the Underground. And it's, man, it rips. Charlie Megira, Let It Rip. Fucking ripping surfy fuzz right there from Charlie Megira and the Modern Dance Club, Beneath the Underground. The rest of the album is great. There's all kinds of weird little snippets from movies and just weird sonic experiments like radio stuff. And some of it's got a real classic rockabilly sound. Some of it has it sounds exactly like The Ventures, like the real deal 60s surf sound. And obviously that has a sort of a surf influence. It's all over the place, man. It's a sonic array. It's a blast off, okay? Check it out. He's got two other albums, two previous to this one, which are also really interesting. A bit more on the rockabilly, spooky sonic tip as far as that goes. I don't know how much this stuff is available on Amazon, but it definitely is available through them. You buy directly. Buy direct from the music source. Go ahead. I dare you. It's okay. It worked for me. I'm still here. Everything worked out. PayPal, okay? Try it out. This next band, you've heard of these guys. They're called Thin Lizzy. They're kind of a big band historically in the terms of rock music, the field of rock. There's a lot to be said about them that I obviously can't say and really don't have really any place in talking about, but I find them amazing, and I think that they have some albums that are unsung. Like, everybody knows Jailbreak. Everybody knows Boys Are Back in Town, right? They do, because they're big old goddamn hits. There's an album they did in 1973, which is, I think, their third album. Also, coincidentally, probably one of the best years for American music, or just music in general, 1973. And this is an album called Vagabonds of the Western World. It's my favorite album of theirs. It's so good. It's good all the way through. It's kind of sweet at times, and it's kind of rip your face off at other times, and it's kind of like bar fight at other times, and it's also kind of above all that with this song, Mama Nature Said, which I'm not a big lyric listener, but I do sometimes, and I feel like this is a rare example of a rock song that rips, but also has a strangely prescient message. Okay, I think that's the best way I can describe it. We'll be right back.
seen the forest for the trees. Cover up your lies with sympathies. And I got no solution to your persecution.
Sorry, I have to fade it there. I'm sorry. It's a shame to fade anything of Phil Lynott singing. Yeah, you get it. You get it. Come on, you get it. You know what I'm talking about. You've been here before. You get it. Okay, and that ends the section of music where we talk about it, okay? Thanks for being here. Time to call somebody, I guess.
Hello?
Hello, I'm looking to speak to Barnett, please. I'm calling about an ATM card.
This is Barnett Kaffer from the ATM International Payment Center. May I help you?
Oh, wow, I can't believe I got a hold of you. This is so great.
Good.
I'm sorry.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the United States, from California. I'm so glad I got you, even on a Sunday.
Oh, no problem. Due to the time limit for the claims, we work 24 hours.
Oh, you do?
All week, yeah.
So you even work on the Lord's Day?
Yeah. Because you have less than 7 working days for your claims.
I see,
so
okay.
So we are open 24 hours so that we can give you the necessary step to for the delivering of your ATM card to your location.
Now, how much money is this going to have on it again? I forgot.
Sorry?
How much money will my ATM card have?
$4 million U.S. dollars.
I was going to have $4 million U.S. dollars on the ATM card. Oh, this is so great.
ATM MasterCard.
It's so exciting to have this. It's going to be like, I'll basically be rich.
That's very good because I would really advise you, as soon as you get your ATM card, you should help the charity organization and the less privileged.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to give it to, money. I'm going to take a bunch of cash out and just go driving down the street and give it to people.
No, that is madness. You do that, you sound like a madman.
No, I just want to give it to...
If you have money...
I'm going to give it to kids, you know, give it to like little kids. Like, roll it up.
You go to charity organizations. There are charity organizations in your country.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't trust those things. I don't trust those.
So, you don't trust those things?
Well, I don't know. I don't know which one to trust. You know, it's hard to say.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, If you look for in your country, in your location, you will see a lot of them to help. People that doesn't have father, people that doesn't have mother, motherless people, you can just try.
People who have no mothers? People who have no mothers?
Try to help them. Yeah.
Oh, how do I do that? Do I give them, I can build a mother out of money, right?
Yeah, you can just go to where they are, just help them, or you give to blind people or those who are blind, and you'll drive to their location.
But
and
they won't be able to use. They won't be able to see it though. How do I find blind people to give them money?
Oh, I don't know. Like in my country right here, I know where to drive to and a lot of blind people.
What, do you ever hit a blind person with your car by accident?
Huh?
Have you ever hit a blind person with your car by accident?
No.
They can't see. Sometimes blind people will go into the road. I was thinking of making
They don't go to the roads.
Oh, they don't. They stay away from the roads. What country are you in?
Well, I'm in West Africa.
Oh, what country? I've never heard of the country called West Africa.
No, West Africa, Nigeria, not...
Nigeria.
West Africa is not a country.
It's not. No, that's why I said I never heard of it. You're in Nigeria, though.
Yeah.
What's the weather like there?
Well, that is so cool now, but during the daytime, it's very hot.
Oh, really?
But now, during the evening time, it's cool now, yeah.
What kind of cool is it? Like, is it like, do you know what degrees in Fahrenheit it is?
Well, it's very hot now.
Oh, yeah.
Very hot now. I can't
hot and dry,
very
huh?
Very hot now.
Does it make it hard to sleep?
With your air condition, you sleep very well.
Cool, man.
Sleep very well.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of air conditioners here. It gets pretty hot where I live because we do a lot of, you know, we get down to business.
Okay.
I don't know. I just
about one of the winner. I thought you are one of the winner that you called before.
I just got this email, so I don't know.
Okay. So what is your name?
My name? What is my name? My name is Jason.
Jason, you're so lucky to have won this great award 2012.
I know, $4 million.
I will advise you to follow all the instructions I'll be giving to you for the claims, okay? Now you have less than 7 working days for the claims process of your ATM debit card. You have to, have I sent you a form to fill?
Yeah, you sent me a form. It's got all the information. I could see. It says here to fill out my name, delivery address, age, sex. Sex. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Occupation.
With those information, listen to me. With those information, we're going to use all this information to process your winnings. Once it's approved for delivery, then we're going to give the next step on what to do for the delivery of your ATM card.
So my question is, I have a full $4 million on this card, huh?
Or the manual, listen to me, the manual that will instruct you on how to make withdrawals, how to change your pins, how to transfer, you're all sealed with your ATM card for delivery. You understand?
No, I can
so
do
it. As soon as you get it back.
I can use this money for whatever I want, right? If I want to buy like a car.
Whatever you want to, you can make withdrawals, you can use to make any payment. And one more thing, you can make withdrawals, $8,000 every day.
$8,000 a day?
You can withdraw a day.
How much a day?
$8,000 a day.
Wait.
$8,000, that is the limit you can withdraw a day.
Can I just do a little math here? Because $8,000, let's see here, I need to get a calculator. Do you have a calculator ready? Because I just want to figure this out. Let me get a calculator out here. Hold on. So if it's $8,000 a day, that's 800.
You can withdraw for a day.
Okay, hold on. $8,000 a day times 365. That's how many days are in a year. So that means in 1 year I can take out only half of the money. I can take out about 3/4 of the money, $2,900,000. So I'd have to take out $8,000 every single day.
Yeah, that is the limit you can withdraw for a day.
Wow, so that's crazy. Why is that the limit?
I don't get you.
Because I want to be able to buy like a helicopter gunship, because I'm trying to start a war with our neighboring country to the north.
You want to squander your money?
No, I'm not to squander it. I'm gonna use this money to buy a helicopter gunship, a fleet of them, to take over an area north of us to steal their mineral rights.
Well, that's a very bad plan you're making.
Well, have you ever heard of the phrase "it takes money to make money"?
That's a bad plan. What? With this kind of money, you don't need all that type of money anymore.
No, that's what I'm saying. See, if I had $4 million, that's all I need to get my fleet of helicopter gunships, and I can take over a smaller country that has more mineral wealth than I have, and then I'll have trillions of dollars, really.
UN is going to fight you for that.
Well, someone will fight me, but they won't be able to fight against my Sikorsky mega gun machine.
UN is going to fight you. NATO will be very angry with you.
That's true. Do you think I should instead maybe like get a bunch of dogs?
Sorry?
Do you like dogs? Like a canine, you know, like a dog? Like woof woof.
Woof.
Like a, you know, like a dog, like a canine, like a ruff ruff, like I'm a puppy, like a puppy dog. You know, it's like a pet, like an animal you have at your home.
Well, listen, I'm very busy now. I have a lot of work. I have a lot of people to attend to right now.
Okay.
You may want to send me email so that we can start the process of
that sounds
your
great.
ATM card.
Okay, well, I think this sounds great. What I'm going to do, actually, is I think I'm not going to get the helicopter gunships. I'm instead probably going to get, like a big swath of land and have a lot of dogs. I wanted to introduce Can I introduce my friend J.K. Simmons to you? Because I think I would like to get him a card as well for $4 million. I think he also deserves one. He's a brilliant actor.
I would like to hang up. I would like to hang up for now. I don't have a lot of things to do now.
You want
to
handle a town?
Yeah, I want to hang up now. I want to hang up.
You want to dance? I don't want to dance. Look,
I don't want to. I have a lot of things to do now. I want to drop the call.
Okay, well, I can't do that.
Sorry?
Look, J.K. Simmons is going to be coming here in a minute, and he's going to want $4 million. He's an amazing guy. He's very funny, and he does so much great work, both in drama and comedy. He's a rare breed of a character actor in the United States. I mean, I got to work with him, and I'm tickled. You know?
I can see that you don't have anything doing right now. You just want to play with my time and want to. I'm not interested in all this many discussion, okay?
Look.
All that is very required now is for your clean step.
Mr. Cafford?
Procedure. And
Mr. Cafford, I would like to play with your dingle.
Dingle?
Your dingle. Your dongle?
Well, the network is breaking right here.
No.
I can really hear you well.
Your hang down Tickletown? Your baby.
Hmm?
Your little baby that hangs around between your legs. Your fun guy. Your dancing boy. You know that guy? I want to play with him.
No, I don't know.
You know.
You go ahead. You go ahead and do whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to do it.
Congratulations once again.
Thank you.
I can see that you are not interested for your claims, and you should send us emails so that we can disqualify you to claim this ATM card. Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna hurry up
because,
and I'm gonna look.
We don't have,
Brentford, I'm gonna email you right. I'm gonna email you right now. Okay, I'm gonna email you right now.
If you want to email, you email and talk
I
about
email
how
you
your ATM card. Okay.
Look, Brent, will you just say one thing for me before I go? I would like to introduce J.K. Simmons.
Wow!
Just say that.
It's
just
up to you.
Just say that. If you say that
it's
to me,
up.
Look. If you say that to me, I'm gonna promise to follow up. Okay? Just say that.
It's up to you. Well, I'm gonna do my job.
Mr. Cafford.
I don't need to make more discussion with listening to me.
Mr.
I'm
Cafford.
The one instructing on what to do here.
Mr. Cafford.
You don't need to
listen to me.
I don't want all this joking stuff.
I'm not joking.
I'm not interested.
I'm not joking right now.
Okay.
You understand me? I'm not fucking joking, okay?
I want you to say right now, say, introducing J.K. Simmons.
Wow. How are you sounding? You hearing yourself?
I do not, but that's because I'm leaning back.
Okay.
And now
Carlos Santana.
Still don't hear myself.
You don't?
There I am.
Mickey
sort
Rourke.
Of.
David Duchovny.
Those are people who wear one earphone?
Yeah, those are one. So that's. I guess you should try that. I've never done the one earphone before. Hey, J.K. Simmons, welcome to Twisting the Wind.
Thank you, Johnny
Thanks
Pemberton.
For being here. Thanks for being here. So, how's it going?
Oh, I see you did supply the wild turkey.
I called your bluff. You see
and
this?
And the M&Ms. But you have not separated
well,
out
you know
the
what?
Green ones.
I didn't. And I was thinking about this earlier. The whole separation of the M&Ms involves a lot of handwork, you know? Like
well, and certainly you don't want to be spreading germs.
Exactly.
But the bag of M&Ms, as a character I once played on your TV would say, is a hot pot of miscegenation.
It is.
All the colors just all mixed together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
I think maybe the green ones are resistant to germs, probably more than others. You think?
No.
They're not. They're the germ friendly ones. See, I didn't want to dig through here. Also, I just was lazy and decided that. This was good enough to call the bluff.
It actually had more
turkey.
Impact this way. Plus, this way you can just return that to the store if you have your receipt because it's unopened.
Yeah, I'm probably going to eat these, actually. I think these have never been returned. Has anyone ever returned peanut M&Ms? It's like...
I certainly hope
peanut
not.
Peanut M&Ms. Like, what are you going to do? Like, they didn't taste perfect.
No, I meant to get a scrub brush.
Yeah.
And
this looked
by
like
accident.
This isn't a Brillo pad? I thought this was a Brillo. It sounds like it could clean. Yeah, you could probably that would be my new cleaning thing. Just put a washcloth on the outside of a bag of peanut M&Ms. You've got a massaging washcloth
And an awesome audio device.
It is. It's a shaker. It's a cheap kid's shaker. Yeah. So yeah, Christmas is around the corner. Are you excited for Christmas?
No.
Not at all.
No.
Are you a Grinch?
No. It's just you know.
It's just, it's like too much.
It's just people everywhere.
Yeah.
You can't go get lunch at the food court at the mall with your kids without, you know,
you're really into
people.
Food courts, right?
I'm heavily into food courts.
Into food court?
Yeah. Much more so than the holidays.
Really? What's the greatest food court, in your opinion?
The, I never remember the name of the joint.
Glendale.
It's in Sherman Oaks.
Sherman Oaks. Okay. That, they have a Galleria there or something, right? Sherman Oaks.
Wow, but it's not the Galleria. It's a different one.
Right?
There is a Galleria. They actually have actual grown-up restaurants or, you know,
right.
not grown-up, but, you
but
know,
like the
family
cheesecake
restaurant.
Factory.
The cheesecake, your P.F. Chang's.
your P.F. Chang's.
Poof Chang's.
Get those lettuce cups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or as some people call it, the Diarrhea Factory.
Ah, no. Lovely.
No,
I thought that was the El Torito, which is right across from.
But you like El Torito?
I do.
I actually got El Torito one day on your recommendation. I was like, "Oh, this is J.K. Raves about El Torito. Yeah. I'll try it out."
Hated
it was good. It was really good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I enjoyed the carne asada. It was a nice. They did my order of no onions, no problem.
They actually listened, which is nice.
They did. Yeah. I know, that's so rare.
That's a big plus.
As a person who often doesn't want onions, it's rare when someone listens to no onions and doesn't go, "Oh, extra onions," right?
Try ordering a Diet Coke with lime.
And, you try that
and
a lot?
See how, yeah, and well, see how often. People? Because I actually like that.
Yeah, you like it before it was a thing.
Before it was, I made it a thing.
You made it a thing. Yeah. You made
I
Diet
started
Coke
with the Diet Coke and lime in like the late 70s.
Really? Uh-huh. I think they had
Took
Diet
it a while
Coke
to catch on. Well, Tab.
Tab, okay.
Tab and a lime.
Are you, are you glad the Tab is back?
I
it's
did
back,
not know.
Isn't it?
I don't know back. If it ever totally left. It was
didn't,
just
did it? It just sort of like went to Canada or something?
Cupboard somewhere.
Yeah. I can't drink the diet drinks. I always feel like when I do hit the diet drinks, it usually is a sign that I am in a bad place because they have more caffeine. And there's also
do they have more caffeine? I did not know that.
Diet Coke has about 1.5 times the caffeine of regular Coke.
I'm actually drinking, here's a commercial.
Okay.
Blue Sky soda.
Blue Sky.
Mostly now.
That's
because
the,
it's
organic
sweetened
stuff, right?
With stevia.
Okay.
Which is, you know,
zero
natural.
It is.
It's not a chemical weird thing.
Right, it's not aspartame.
Doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy, but it's natural.
Yeah, it is
much
natural.
Much like hemlock.
Hemlock, isn't that a poison?
Yes, but it's completely natural
right, okay.
and organic.
Yeah, that's the same way that, aren't tomatoes? Tomatoes are part of the nightshade family, which people used to think were poisonous.
They did, although tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh.
No.
I guess it depends how you say it, right? Yeah. A poison, there's an old Shakespearean saying, a poison is a name if it is nothing else, right?
Yeah.
That's what it
yes,
is.
Yes, that's
yeah,
exactly it, Johnny.
Juliet, you're a rose. If you're not a bitch, you're probably a rose. So,
but rose dick. Can be a bitch.
Rose can be a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're an actor.
Yeah.
We're actors.
Yeah.
When did you start acting? I mean, not like acting. Obviously, you danced out of the womb like the T-Rex song, right?
But, yeah, yeah.
But when were you like first like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm actually going to do this.
Yeah, you know what? I was really actually doing it before I kind of realized that it was happening.
You sort of like folded into it?
I was studying music in college.
Right.
My stage debut was actually in the eighth grade health class play.
Really? What was it about?
Well, it was called Alice in Foodland.
Okay.
And I played Tweedledum.
Oh, man.
Alongside Kyle Lafferty, who was the other tackle on the football team in eighth grade.
Kyle.
We were the two big guys with, you know, tutus on, as I recall.
Which is always funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got a few laughs. Mm-hmm. But then it wasn't like I didn't like go the whole thespian route from there. I was in college studying music and wanted to be Leonard Bernstein.
So you were studying composition?
Composition,
wow,
voice,
okay.
and, you know, conducting. And,
so you play piano, I suppose, huh?
You know what? Not
a little
so
bit.
Well.
Never, I thought,
no.
you had to play piano to be a composer.
Well, here's the thing. My composition teacher in college actually said, and this was, you know, rationalizing and justifying, but because I have absolutely no talent in my hands whatsoever couldn't really play the piano worth a damn,
right.
His theory was, and I think this was accurate, during that brief period when the, you know, classical music muse was with me, I wasn't limited by what I could play on my 10 fingers, you know? So I was just kind of sucking music out of the cosmos, like Brahms used to say, and just, you know, putting it down onto paper direct from the heavens.
You're just tripping balls.
I was tripping my ass off. Yeah.
Right.
But wrote some awesome stuff.
So do you play any type of music at all? I mean, any type of instrument?
Nah, you know, I can fake it on guitar, piano for a while. My kids both, you know.
They're into it.
Yeah, they both play a lot better than I do.
So you did composition for a while. At what point were you like, this is not the road to be on?
Yeah, it wasn't even I was in college doing it. I started doing summer stock and kind of, you know, segue the literally the whatever muse came and visited me for a few years there and was pouring music through me onto a page. You know, had her time and nice. Left and
yeah, she's visited some other people like David Lee Roth.
She jumped off of me onto Stephen Sondheim for a while, and then David Lee Roth.
So you share the same muse. That's pretty cool.
Circuitous route. Yeah,
that's nice. So, do you still have any of those compositions?
I do actually. In fact, I just appeared with the symphony in one of my three hometowns. Actually some things. I'm sure everybody who's listening is well aware of the Aaron Copland.
Oh, yeah, we know about this.
Lincoln portrait.
Uh-huh. We got a lot of Southerners listening to this show.
And the Ashokan Farewell, which is anyway. There are things that orchestras sometimes do with guys who just talk.
Really?
Yeah. It's so, just, they play the music, exactly? And I had a score in front of me, and it's actually weirdly hard because I used to sing and stuff with orchestras, but... You know, you were part of the music there.
Yeah, so you're here, with
it's
the
like
rhythm and everything.
You're
yeah.
reading the music and then you start talking here, but it's hard to just talk like a normal human and still hear everything that's going on under you musically and stay with the conductor without making him, you know, sort of wave his arms like a maniac going, no, you're, you know.
Is that because you want to like, because you naturally want to lock in with the rhythm or something, right? So you start to be like.
Well, or you just are. So consciously not doing that because you're just trying to like read Abe Lincoln speeches,
right.
You know, with some kind of human intelligent rhythm that's not constricted or bound by the music that you end up like totally off.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's kind of like a radio play in a sort of sense, except
it's not
radio.
Even remotely
live.
In any way at all.
Thanks for being here. Thanks. It was really fun to have you and
good talking to you.
Be parting gifts around.
Thanks
the
for
table.
The wild turkey, dude.
Yeah. You can take that, but not the glasses. Well, maybe I'll try to do that sometimes, write a composition that I can have you speak over. I like that idea. I think
awesome.
We'll start a nice new secondary NPR based upon that, and it will be wildly unsuccessful, but the government will, maybe they can use it as for like government
speech.
Well, they'll
be listening in.
Yeah, they'll be listening like, hey, can you read this public service announcement for us over this Philip Glass composition? People just like the way it sounds. Have you ever heard of those Conet number projects things? It's really strange.
I have not.
It's this weird collection of music. Not really music. It's during the Cold War, they used to communicate with their spies in bed overseas by using shortwave radio.
Right.
And then they have like these stations that have like a weird little tone that'll play like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And then some lady goes, 4, 7, 29, 16, 40. It's so creepy. And there's like, you know, hundreds of them recorded. They are the creepiest thing you've ever heard in your life, and it's just like, it's all these, they don't have any name because no one will own up to be like, you know, oh yeah, that was us, that was our government. We weren't spying in the Cold War, no, those were just pictures, we're checking to see what they were growing, you know, see if, how many beets, would be, you know, but no one owns up to it, but they're really interesting to listen to. They're like, yeah.
So is that, first of all, it's just weird to have someone, you know, who's 11 years old educating me about the Cold War, but... Second of all, the other thing that occurs to me as your eyes sort of glazed over as you were describing that, is that something you'd like listen to when you're masturbating or?
Definitely. Yeah. When I hear like number 27 said by this lady, it's just like, it's like peak, just
it's a hot number.
The apex of sexuality for me. Cause I'm just so boring that when I hear that kind of shit, I just explode in the pants. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, good.
Maybe we can do that. That'd be a good play. People masturbating to these Cold War number sequences.
It'll be certain on, kind of people.
It'll be on Santa Monica at a very, very small off Santa Monica Broadway.
Can you hear my phone in the back?
I can
you
hear
don't
it.
Mind if I get this, do you?
Just take gotta, it.
You
Who
know,
is it?
I don't know.
Is it Leonard Bernstein?
It's not a number I recognize, but it could be somebody interesting. I'll just pick it up and see.
Okay,
hello? Yeah. No, I'm not going to answer the phone.
You can. Stranger things have happened here, I think. I'm not really sure exactly, but back to your trajectory of life. So you were doing this composition and stuff, and then you started getting, you said doing summer stock, is that right? Summer stock is, what is summer stock exactly? I always
well,
hear
it was,
that word.
Technically it was summer rep.
Okay.
I'm going to make a noise by moving my microphone. Ooh, that was silent.
It's nice and greased.
But yeah, let's get off the whole lubrication idea.
I wasn't talking about it.
Yeah, it was when I was in college, and I actually took a quarter off to go play Figaro in The Marriage Of by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And the guy whose high school class was painting the set came up, and we were just chatting, and he said, "Oh, I run this little summer theater, and maybe you'd like to." And I said, "Nah, no thanks. I don't think so."
Right.
And then a few months later, blah, 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 I happened to be with another pal, and he was, you know, "I'm going to go to this summer theater," and I, you know, my summer plans had fallen apart, so. So I ended up at the Big Fork Summer Playhouse.
The Big Fork is in Montana,
Big
right?
Big Fork, Montana.
Montana.
Up near Glacier Park, and it's, you know, right in the middle of God's country.
A lot of natural beauty there.
Really, really.
Steinbeck would be at home.
He would.
I think so, right?
He was.
Yeah. Did he stop by
and
there?
Hemingway. Hemingway was a big Idaho, northern Idaho,
he
western
was?
Montana fan, yeah.
Hemingway, the house I grew up in Rochester, Minnesota, the house next to us was where he used to walk. He was staying when he was a mental patient. I guess he used to take walks around there at night right before he shot himself in the face.
Neat.
Yeah. So
he would take walks around your neighborhood with weapons.
I think so.
Awesome.
And something about Rochester, Minnesota gave him the courage to finally end his life.
Nice.
Something about the bleakness of that horrible
I have
place.
A cousin in Rochester. And,
you do?
And,
we talked about this. Yeah,
my brother lived in Minnesota for many years, too, up in the big Twin Cities.
Yeah, you've been up there a bunch.
Minneapolis. Yeah.
So
it's cold. It's
cold. Deadly cold. Yeah. There was a winter once when I was in high school where it was so cold the governor canceled school in the entire state for 2 days in a row.
Nice.
Because it was 60 below zero in the warmest place. Warmest part.
The coldest city, I learned this when I was there, in the world of over a million people is Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Winnipeg.
Right above Minnesota.
Yep.
There, you know?
It's deadly. Oh, yeah. Unbelievable.
54 below without the wind chill when we were shooting, like, you know, duck hunting scenes. And
what were you shooting up there?
I'm not telling.
You won't tell?
No.
So how many things on your list of things are things that you were like, I would like to forget about that?
Just a few.
Just a couple?
A handful. You know?
Is this something where I'd have to go to like Mongo Video a Go-Go to find, or...
Wow, is that what the kids are going to now? Because
I've actually never been there. I've just heard about it. It's some video store like on Melrose in a shitty neighborhood that has like...
Oh, it's an actual place in the real world, not a virtual thing.
I think it's it may not even be there anymore, but it was it's a place you can get your VHS tapes, you know?
Awesome.
Of weirdo, like, John Waters wanted to make this movie, but he wasn't allowed to, so someone else did. Like,
can
that
you get
kind
of your, like, 8-track of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer there, too?
I don't know. I mean, they probably have anything people don't actually want, they probably have.
Awesome, yeah.
Anything that you can't sell legally. I think it's the whole deal. So it was one of those kind of things. It was like a... you don't want to talk about it.
No.
It's okay.
No, you know, it was just, it was not a great movie. It was the writer's strike. I have a lot of excuses.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Excuses are fine.
You know, plus it's, you know, what I do for a living.
So you started doing musical theater for a long time.
Yeah.
That was your main deal, right?
And then after the Big Fork Summer Playhouse in Big Fork, Montana.
Right.
A delightful place to go spend a week in the summer.
That's
and
good.
See some musical theater.
This show brought to you by the Big Fork Playhouse in Montana. Shows most of the time when they're not, I don't know, taking care of those sheep.
Yeah.
No.
When my parents first moved to Montana, my father's boss back in Ohio told me that he's, and I literally did not know the geography. This speaks to our public school education.
Right.
The geography of the United States because I had lived in Michigan and Ohio my whole life. I'd never traveled west of the Mississippi. And when my parents and my little brother were moving to Montana, I literally was trying to envision that corner of the United States, and I just forgot about Idaho. I just thought Montana bordered with Washington State. But when my dad's boss, you know, heard that he was moving to Montana, he in that awkward way that grown-up men do with, like, teenage guy, I guess I was 17 at the time. He said, "Yeah, Montana, that's where men are men, women are scarce, and sheep are nervous."
Ooh.
And I was like,
"No, it's because no,
I'm 17. Don't talk about like penis stuff to me. That's just weird."
Hey, so seriously though, you gonna fucking those sheep out there?
Yeah, sure.
Seriously,
they're willing.
Send one back for me. Send a pretty one back for me, will you? Send a pretty one back.
I do know I had a good friend there who that was his first experience with a living being.
You know, there's this thing. This is like kind of gross, and but it's true.
Grosser than fucking sheep, or
there's like a group of people who live in I think it's Colombia in the sort of in the country of Colombia, where it is totally acceptable to have sex with a donkey until you're ready to do it with a woman.
Well, sure, with like, a female donkey, you mean?
Yeah. Female donkey. Yeah,
certainly, they're not so queer.
Yeah, it's not. Can you mean they're not gay? They're Catholic. They can't have sex with them. Oh, that would be bad.
That would be against the Bible.
Oh yeah, that would send the wrath of God down on you. Having gay sex with an animal. God, that is just not allowed. That's not good. Yeah. Speaking of gay sex, so what did your family think about you doing musical theater?
Yeah.
Like,
well, my dad was a musician, music teacher.
Okay.
And, you know, my parents were totally supportive and cool. But it was, especially having started out doing musical theater
right.
in Montana in the 70s, where there probably were one or two gay guys, but they were
right.
so firmly in the closet that, you know. And then after I graduated from college, I moved to sort of the nearest big city that made any sense to me, which was Seattle.
Okay.
And ended up doing a show there after I spent a couple of months washing cars in the rain at a used car lot.
Washing cars in Seattle seems sort of like...
I know. It was like, wash the cars. It's raining.
You're getting paid
$2.11 an hour, so go wash the cars and then, you know, start them up. But after a couple of months of that, I got a job doing, you know, a musical in Seattle at the Palace Theater. And, of course, you know, there were 13 men, and I was one of two straight guys in the company.
So you just cleaned up.
Huh? Dude, it was awesome.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's like the great fringe benefit of being a straight guy doing musical theater.
Yeah.
There's always like 10 hotties, and most of the guys are gay.
So anyone ever try to fight you at all in that situation?
Like in the world? Ever?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, I had to beat up a few guys.
But you've done a lot of the beating versus beating down ratio. What is it, you think? Has anyone ever beat you up?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I got my ass kicked really badly when Dave Ford and I went to downtown Columbus to see the Temptations at age 15 and just didn't realize being the only two white guys in the audience at a Temptations concert in 1969.
They weren't having it?
You know, I mean, no. I mean, 99.9% of everybody was having it. We were having a great time. And then... Yeah, you know, long story, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, these five guys ended up kicking the shit out of me.
But not Dave Ford.
Well, Dave wisely, you know, Dave. Got the hell out.
Oh, wow. He just left you.
Knock Dave. I mean, would I have stood up to, you know, five angry young black men who were 2 or 3 years older than us who were kicking my friend's ass? And what's the point in getting a beat down just, you know, so you can say you were there
to not be a pussy? You took
it's instinct.
Was that before? Had you ever been in a fight before that?
I did hit somebody in the face in like third grade. Only after we'd rolled around on the ground for, you know, probably a minute.
Right.
Fighting about which way, and this was just positively un-American.
Which way?
We were playing baseball. No, it was which way do you run to first base after you hit a baseball? I was like, oh my God. You're 8 years old. What are you? Are you a communist?
What side were you on?
The correct side.
Communist.
Of course.
Okay, you weren't a communist.
I was not a communist. And whoever the kid was, we ended up rolling and rolling and rolling on the ground in this tussle. And then I finally was able to clearly hear somebody from, you know, the gang that gathers. I heard somebody say, hit him. And I thought, well,
okay,
that's a logical idea. That might end this stalemate. And
right.
I hit him in the face, and he cried, and I felt bad. And that was my first fight. And then the second one was getting my ass kicked by five black guys in downtown Columbus at a Temptations concert.
That's pretty good.
And then after, as I was literally like picking up my teeth and bleeding all over the ground, I was just starting to stand up. And it turns out the five guys had run off in two different directions. So as I'm kind of coming back to clarity, I see two guys running at me again, you know, and I just kind of duck and cover. And
they weren't finished?
No, they were just running past me because they realized they wanted to run with their friends.
Right, right.
And then I ducked and covered and nothing more bad happened. And then I stood up and, like, you know, Bubba Smith was standing, you know, looming over me, walking towards me. And I just thought, oh, my God, this is... This guy's come to finish me off. And of course, you know, he was some nice guy. He was helping pick me up and saying, you okay?
Need backstage
Can I call
pass.
Somebody for you? Yeah. You want to go meet the temps?
Meet the temps.
No, that didn't happen.
It's pretty good though. Yeah. So
and I had a great story to tell at school, you know, because I mean, I
oh
was,
yeah, it's a great story to tell.
Bad. And my English teacher at the time, Ethel Nichols, was one of the few black teachers at my school, which was like 90% white. And she like had this weird sort of reverse white liberal guilt.
Really?
Some kind of thing going on, you know, about
this. Isn't like what, like late 69
or 70, yeah.
So that's the album. Is that Solid Gold, I think, was the Temptations album? I'm trying to think.
Well, it was Greatest Hits was the one that Dave Ford and I were, you know, that had probably just come out.
Yeah, that's the album I got from my dad, I'm pretty sure, is that one. Maybe, what's the album called? When It Rains or what? Let's just talk about the Temptations albums that we
Motown
don't actually know.
Motown in the late 60s. The Four
yes,
Tops.
Motown. People liked Motown. Conclusion, people enjoyed Motown.
Motown's awesome.
It is pretty good.
And I was born in Motown, so.
Oh, okay, so you've got Detroit roots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been singing a long time, more than almost anything. That's like your instrument, is your voice.
Yes, my voice is my instrument.
It is.
Yeah.
Can we do Lady, Please?
No.
No, okay. Just no ladies.
You know, just yell Lady like Jerry Lewis in a movie in the city. Lady!
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever had someone do that to you when you're doing like a voice acting thing where they're just like puppeting you, like, you know, do this, do that, like do all different thousands of
like
voices.
Annoying directors?
Yeah, yeah, people who can't make up their mind, like asking for a thousand different sounds from you.
Yes. Yeah. And I am really a man of 13 sounds. So I do like animation work and stuff, but I'm not one of those. Like,
yeah, some people,
you know,
are real
Tom
chameleons.
Kenny, Billy West, Dan Castellaneta, you know, Hank Azaria kind of guys.
Yeah.
I can do it. I can do, you know, characters, but not, not like that facile.
Right. Yeah, when you get JK, you get JK.
That's right. I'm a freaking star.
I was watching the Venture Brothers the other day with my girlfriend, and she is a deep and crazy devoted fan of the Venture Brothers. And, I mean, she made me ask, I'm asking you now. How did that happen, the whole Venture Brothers thing? Because they're very like uniquely selective in who they have on the show, because they don't have many guests, it seems to be.
They called my agent and said, we want JK to be on our show and we'll pay him hundreds of dollars.
Got it.
And my agent said, it's a funny show.
It is.
You should be on it. And I said, oh, okay.
Actually,
I live in Los Angeles, California, where I have for these 9 years.
9 years, that's it.
But I lived in New York for 20 years before that. I happened to be in New York, which is where they do the show.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they have this weird compound.
They were planning on just phone patching me from L.A., but I happened to be like the next week I was going to New York, so I got to do it in their place. It is a funny show.
Yeah, it's such a weird, crazy, funny show that it's like they can get away with so much stuff that no other show does.
Yeah.
Have you? So when did you first deviate from the whole musical theater thing and start acting?
Well, when I moved to Seattle, I started, you know, it was sort of a burgeoning theater town at the time, and but there wasn't always musical stuff going on, and I'm trying to remember what the first, I did some Joe Orton plays at the Skid Road Theater in Seattle, and that was maybe the first, you know, professional, not musical thing that I did, and
right.
You know, and then I ended up getting jobs at the Seattle Rep and this and that, and just really stumbling from one thing into another and doing different plays and learning, even though I never went to theater school. You know, I ended up doing classical stuff and Shakespeare and just bouncing back and forth between every different kind of theater imaginable for 5 years or so in Seattle before I moved to New York. And then basically my first 7 or 8 years in New York, I was doing the same thing, just bouncing all over the country at different regional theaters.
So when you were doing the stuff in Seattle, were you making a living off of that, or were you doing like odd jobs and stuff at the same time?
Yeah, once I started, I was mostly making a living at it, actually, after the washing cars in the rain. Well, there was also the selling subscriptions to the newspaper that people don't want.
The Seattle Observer?
The Seattle Times.
Seattle Times,
yeah.
Okay. I think I just made up a newspaper.
Doing random cold calls, and then we had some like, fallback. Hi, I'm blah 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 from the Seattle Times. Are you currently a subscriber to the Times? You know,
did you,
of course, most
your
people were not. But then if they go, yes, I am.
You go,
well, fine. This is just a checkup call to see how your, you know, delivery service has been. And then, of course, every once in a while, people go, well, you know what? Last Tuesday, and you go, okay, call this number. Bye. You know,
this number that doesn't exist. It has. Wait a second. This is only 7 numbers. This isn't.
There's no.
What area? Huh? Hey. Everyone who lives in Seattle sounds like that, right? Yeah.
They do mostly, like, yeah. Sort of like David Letterman's stupid guy.
He does that a lot, doesn't he? He still does that. Dave, he loves that. He loves the stupid guy. He loves Crispin Glover and stupid guy.
Yes.
Have you ever worked with Crispin Glover?
I have not worked with Crispin Glover.
Do you think, would you like to?
Yes and no.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It would be like an interesting experience.
Yeah.
I think it's like Vegas. It's like, take a little dose of it and then you're out.
Yeah.
Or maybe
it's
not. Maybe it's like heroin where it's just like, oh, I didn't realize how good it was.
Take a little dose of it and then, you're in.
And you're in. Yeah. It's like, wow, I didn't realize things, there's like a ninth color you were missing this entire time.
Yeah. Dabbling in heroin is not I don't know how we got to that, but.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to do that either. I don't want to dabble.
No, I didn't. That's one of the few things I didn't dabble in.
So, but you, when you were going crazy on the psychedelic scene in Seattle in the 70s?
Well, Johnny, my mom is still living, so I think we should just steer clear of that topic.
Is your mom into podcasts? Is your mom into sort of
radio programs? It's frightening how much my mom hears about in Montana. About what's going on in show business. And of course, because I don't, when I call, my family and talk, I don't talk about show business because I don't really pay attention to show business. So
yeah, it's pretty.
Every once in a while, she's kind of miffed that she's like, why didn't you tell me you were in this, movie or whatever,
Yeah, I feel the same way where it's like, you're talking about it. I don't know. I feel like I've already talked about it enough at the point when it's something to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you call home, you want to talk about, how's Aunt Isla doing?
Or yeah. Or how's, where's the eggnog?
Yeah.
Whose jacket is this? Who the fuck put this here? This is my chair.
Yeah. I generally don't drop the F-bombs on mom.
Oh, you don't?
Sometimes. God. Sometimes.
I do now. And it's like.
Not belligerently like that.
No, not belligerent. It's more just like, oh, that's fucking bullshit. Who's that guy? And it's become just this thing where it's casual. And yeah, it's never toward someone. It's definitely not toward mom, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
The language
fuck
thing
you,
is.
Mom. Yeah, that does.
Yeah, it's not a lot of nice. Fuck you, mom, at home during the Christmas.
No, I remember the first. You remember the first time one of your parents like cursed in front of you?
I'm trying to think. I kind of remember. No, I do remember my dad one time saying to me very seriously, "You're ASG," because he didn't want to say my ass is grass, which is like not such a big deal to say my ass is grass. You're ASG, young man. You're ASG. Ooh, you're in deep S.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what I did. It's probably something brutal. Not that bad at all. Do you remember the first time you heard?
Well, I remember two things from my dad. One, that when I was probably, 11, and my little brother would have been 7, and he had a couple of knucklehead friends sleeping over at the house, and they decided they were going to sleep out on the screen porch.
Mm-hmm.
In the Midwest, we all used to have the old screen porch, which you would put the storm windows on in the winter, right?
And stay cool.
But the screens had just gone on. It was early spring, still cold, and he said we were going to pick up the pizza at Leonardo's and.
Good old Leonardo's.
Good old Leonardo's Pizza in Worthington, Ohio. I'm doing commercials for them and the Big Fork Summer Playhouse.
Now a pizzeria.
Big Fork, Montana, 59911. And so we're going to pick up the pizza. And I said, so David and, his little knucklehead pals are going to sleep, out on the screen porch or out of the backyard or whatever it was. He goes, those dummies are going to freeze their balls off, And I was like, oh. Dad knows what balls means.
Balls. He's got a pair.
Wow. Yeah. And then later he referred to this was when I was like 19 or, 18 in college. But the first time I heard him drop the F-bomb was he was talking about a colleague of his. He said she should take a flying fuck at a rolling donut.
Oh.
Which was not only the first time I heard him use that word, but it was the first time I heard that expression, which is such a great visual.
Yeah, flying fuck at
a rolling donut. But
that's for a woman to do that, right?
Well, which would make it extra difficult. She'd have some kind of a strap-on device.
She'd have to
device,
have
like,
a strap-on to take a flying fuck. We're like, Dad, actually, she doesn't have a phallus, so...
No, we didn't really get into it beyond that. I was going along with, in the spirit of what he was saying, because she was a... pain in the ass.
That bitch.
Yeah.
Let's say her name. name names, please. Name names.
I will not.
Flying fucking rolling. I never heard any good expressions from as far as swearing goes. Did you ever get really into cursing at some point where you're like, because you're pretty good at it now. I have to say, you're pretty good at it.
A few years on HBO.
Yeah. Oh, that'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're all, a few years in the locker room as a adolescent boy. God, I just all of a sudden, like, all you can think of is fucking Jerry Sandusky now. Anytime anybody talks about locker rooms and young kids, let's not.
Nope. Go
there.
Let's not horse around with that topic. I feel like he's tainted that phrase even.
Yeah. He's tainted a lot.
He is he's a taint. He's a liquid taint, basically. Nice. So back to your career trajectory.
Yes.
You're in Seattle, you're doing all this acting, and then you moved to New York. What was the impetus to move to New York for you?
I had done a musical in Sun Valley, Idaho, called Cowboy, written by some Montana guys, actually, and it was about the life of Charles M. Russell, who was a great Western artist, painter and sculptor, way better than Frederick Remington, who most people, are more familiar with.
Those people are. So.
Yeah, when you see, like, sculpted bronzes of cowboys and stuff. It's either Remington or Russell.
Like Hank Williams' 24 greatest hits.
No.
He's got that.
Does he have that?
There's a bronze on the cover of that. At least the edition I bought when I was
in probably a freaking Remington, because I think he's more of a like Texas guy.
Okay.
Charlie Russell was an actual cowboy who was out there, wrangling and doing his thing. And
rustling.
He was not rustling.
Okay.
He was wrangling.
Sorry. Is there a difference between rustling and wrangling?
Yes, rustling is stealing.
Oh, it is,
which
isn't
is
it?
Illegal.
Yeah, rustlers.
And wrangling is herding and keeping together.
And then there's what's James Garner's character in The Great Escape. He's a, what do they call him? He's a great name. He gets stuff. He acquires things. He's the.
I just started reading his book, The Garner Files. Actually, really? His autobiography.
Scrounger, not the Scrounger, is it?
I don't know. See. I saw that movie once when I was 11 when it came out, and I remember is Steve McQueen with the the motorcycle.
I didn't even know who Steve McQueen was when I saw that movie. He was like
the
least.
That was probably the first time I ever saw him. Because you and I are about the same age.
Yeah, about the same age. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So you're talking about the Cowboys.
Yeah,
the
right. So Cowboy. Yeah. So we did this production of Cowboy in Sun Valley, Idaho, and then it was then we're going to go to Broadway, and the leading lady was an actress. Which is what we used to call female actors.
I still do that, and I feel like sometimes I feel like I'm like about to get slapped or something.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
I don't see anything wrong with it, honestly.
Yeah,
I feel like it's nothing.
Differentiating gender is not a negative.
Yeah.
Prejudice.
Like when you have the Academy Awards, they don't say best female actor,
best performance by a female actor.
They say
in
actress,
a,
right? Best actress.
I think they still do.
Yeah, unless something is, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't watch them awards shows.
So you were with an actress.
I was. Yes. Yes. I was with many actresses during those days. And So it just seemed a logical time for me to go to New York and, live on people's floors in Hell's Kitchen and actually camp with my aunt and uncle in Scarsdale, where my five cousins grew up.
Scarsdale.
Which is not nearly as ritzy as it sounds.
It's a real pretty name, Scarsdale.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the, ritzy suburbs in Westchester.
Oh, it is. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh. It's where, the ridiculously rich people live. But there's also, normal neighborhood Scarsdale,
That's how it always works. The places that have the horrible names are nice.
Yeah. Scarsdale. Grosse Pointe.
Grosse Pointe,
Grosse Pointe. Skokie.
But that's not nice, is it? Skokie? That's in Alabama. Where is Skokie?
No,
Illinois.
Illinois, suburb of Illinois.
Sheboygan. Sheboygan, Kenosha.
Poughkeepsie,
Lake Mackinac.
Two Dot, Montana.
Hawaii. Juneau, Alaska.
Juneau? We did a thing a couple years after Juneau, which was a movie
right?
Some people saw.
People saw.
But we did a little thing called Juneau, Jewno, that was just this little. It wasn't Funny or Die. It was kind of right before Funny or Die.
Okay,
it was just
internet.
This random internet thing that one of the writers on Jon Stewart's show put together, and I don't know how he knew somebody who knew me, and so I did this little reprisal of my. Where we were all like, she's dating this boy. What are we going to do? And the rest of the actors were all like imitators, of the actors who had played the original parts. And then I imitated myself only.
That's pretty good.
I was a Jew from Brooklyn.
Are you Jewish?
I am not.
You're not? Even way back?
No. I mean, I have no Jewish blood that
Irish?
I know of. Irish Scot. I'm a mutt, you know,
you're
like most American
classic
Irish,
mutt.
Scots, Irish, a tiny bit of German, maybe a little 1/16th Black Hawk Indian.
You got the Black Hawk
in the background,
huh?
There, yeah, which you can kind of see on my mom's side of the family.
I think I have even less, and it's something even more stereotypical, which is Cherokee. So
yeah.
I'm told.
Yeah, right.
There was a big rock.
You know what? You go back far enough, we're all, you know, African and Native American and everything else, too. I do have Jewish cousins because my mom's younger brother married a Jewish woman. So,
my grandfather used to say, I said grandfather. I always called him grandpa. So weird to say grandfather.
My grandfather.
My grandfather once said, he was not a grandpa. He was a grandpa. He claimed that if your family was in the United States for more than 4 or 5 generations, you have Native American blood. Because it's like, I guess those women, they looked good. They looked really good because they got that exotic look. And if you're like some Welsh guy who's coming to town and you're in Oklahoma.
Right, and there's a bunch of like pasty white broads around. Yeah.
You got some missing teeth and who knows what kind of weird shit happened to get that wagon to where you landed to farm. See that exotic Indian, yeah.
We're back on the topic of miscegenation where we began with the bag of M&Ms.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
Huh.
You think that's, I don't know if it's that. I'm just saying that it was probably a fun time to be, no, it was not a fun, fun time to be alive.
Before that intranet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you really active on the internet at all?
No.
You're not?
No.
So you don't take, do you take part in any type of social media?
No.
Not even the slightest bit?
No, nor will. Well, I guess as my children delve into the Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And the My Place stuff.
My Place?
And
that's the new
one.
The
tweeting, huh? And the twittering. I probably will have to, you know, just to sort
just
of
keep tabs.
Monitor, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works. You kind of get forced into it, huh?
Yeah.
But you have a phone. You have a cell phone.
I do. I have two cell phones.
That's mainly for checking Ohio State scores, right?
Mostly Ohio State football and Detroit Tiger baseball scores. Yeah.
Why are you so into Ohio State? Because is that just because it's where you spent the most time?
Well, that was, you know, my two first stops growing up were Detroit when my dad taught public school, and then he got a job at Ohio State in the music department when I was like 10.
Mm-hmm.
So most of my, maybe 11, most of my junior high and high school years, I was, you know, going to the football games and, you know, rooting for Ohio State. Although most of my, it's kind of a weird combination to be a.
But it's not like
Detroit
your alma
Tigers.
Mater.
Well, it's one of the three colleges that I attended for my one degree.
Okay.
So it's technically, my alma mater is actually the University of Montana, where I actually finally graduated.
So you split it. So you, where did you start going to college then?
Ohio U.
Ohio U.
Because they had an early admissions program for exceptional high school juniors who are really tired of high school and good at taking tests.
Oh, that's, I wish I was there.
Yeah. And so my friend Randy Washington and I got out of high school a year early and went down to OU completely unprepared for, you know, anything.
Yeah.
And then after a couple quarters there, I thought, you know, I don't want to really major in, you know, pinball and pot anymore.
Okay.
And I'm going to go study music where my dad teaches music at Ohio State. And I went up there about the time my family was moving out to Montana in their continuing efforts to get away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And then after whatever, less than a year, I went out to Montana and visited. We already talked about that. It's really cool.
So what boring. You're saying is you smoked weed and
smoked a lot of weed
in
Ohio at Ohio University, which was mostly known as a weed smoking.
Right. Marijuana, a federally controlled scheduled substance that is illegal. But,
oh, no, I don't mean marijuana.
Oh,
when I say weed,
No.
I mean like dandelions.
Oh,
or,
yeah, all right,
you know,
of
whatever.
Course.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify.
Nothing, no illegal activities.
We can scrub the record. It will be expunged. There's no problems here. The statute of limitations is...
I think so. Yeah, that was, let me see. Yeah, more than 7 years ago, so yeah.
So when did you first start getting into the whole film business, business of movies?
Well, I... after 6 or 7 years bouncing around, living in New York, but actually living 3/4 of the year, you know, in wherever I was doing a play in Buffalo or Albany or Boston or, I finally actually got, some work on Broadway, and I basically spent the first half of the 90s going from one Broadway show to another.
Mm-hmm.
And the fifth Broadway show I did was a Neil Simon play called Laughter on the 23rd Floor, an underrated play.
People like Neil Simon.
Neil Simon's
a
funny guy.
He's good.
And a great, great cast of actors, many of whom, you know, also did film and television. Nathan right. Lane, John Slattery, wow. Mark Lynn Baker, Randy Graff, Lou Stadlin. Great, great, great cast. And I'm the people that I'm not mentioning are...
They're just as great. They're just...
Equally great.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, when we did the national tour, my lovely and talented wife, Michelle Schumacher, joined in the role originally created by Biddy Schramm.
So...
Which is a major digression. So it was during that run
right.
that I actually decided this is my fifth Broadway show. You know, they've all had significant runs. You do the same show 8 times a week for mm-hmm. like 6 months, 8 months, 9 months.
It's a long time.
A year. It's like working at a factory, you know. So you get, and this is like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for a theater actor. You're on Broadway. You're in a hit. You actually even get a little bit of a raise. So, you know, you're paying your rent and maybe putting a couple dollars in the bank every month.
Right.
And, but, you know, as I talked to those guys who every once in a while would go out to their mailbox and get a residual check, I thought, that's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Not doing the same thing every day and getting paid for it after you're done doing it for a while, you know. So I just told my agent, I'm not going to audition for a play. I just want to do, you know, whatever, any mm-hmm. film and TV I can do. You know, he was able to scrounge a couple of auditions. And one of the first ones I stumbled into was a Law and Order, the first time Law and Order and Homicide did a crossover episode.
Right.
And I had auditioned a couple weeks before for a guest spot on Law and Order that they didn't hire me for.
What year is this, you think?
93, 94.
93, right.
And like a couple weeks later, Ed Sheeran, who was at Law and Order at the time, producer, they were casting for the bad guy in the first crossover Law and Order goes to Baltimore and meets the Homicide Life on the Street guys. And, they cast me, I think sight unseen. I think I didn't even audition for it. And then they said, get on a train to Baltimore, you know, the day after tomorrow.
Was
or
that
like
just
tomorrow
on recommendation from the,
because Ed had just,
director?
They had just put me through a whole long audition process okay. for this guest star part that I didn't get.
Oh,
and
I see. Yeah.
And then, you know, And it was less than a year later that Oz came along, you know, Tom Fontana, again,
right.
who was the creator of both Homicide and Oz. And he was casting, and it was like this neo-Nazi
right.
you know, bastard. And when he was casting Oz, he thought of me for that part. And I initially sort of balked at it because...
That's a pretty heavy
gotten,
deal. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd gotten so much, I mean, after doing theater for 20 years and nobody giving a shit,
right.
I couldn't go anywhere. You know, without people stopping me on the street and talking about, you know, Homicide and my character, uh-huh. you know. And so I was, you know, I was leery about being, you know, the Nazi bastard for the rest of my life. And I had this long talk with Tom, who was like, I think somewhat befuddled because I'm from hunger, you know, I'm like,
yeah,
I mean, I should be get down on my knees.
Thank you.
Oh my God. A TV job, you know, HBO. And I was, but I was also, you know, smart enough to be leery of it. And he assured me that, you know, the character was, he didn't even have scripts yet. He just sort of had, this is the concept of the show. And he'd written a few of, I was going to say Harold Hill, Harold Perrineau's character who played Augustus Hill on the show, the guy in the wheelchair. He'd written a bunch of his monologues already, the sort of Greek chorus character that Harold played. And so everybody was just reading those, and he was, you know, it was like a children's theater audition where now read it like this. Now read it like this is how you feel, you know? And so there I am basically kind of trying to talk my way out of the job. And Tom says, look, this character is not going to be just a two-dimensional, you know,
yeah.
Nazi bastard. He's going to be, you know, when we first meet him, we're going to think, oh, maybe he's going to be a friend to our everyman, and mm-hmm. as it develops, you know, blah, blah, blah. It turned out as it develops was like the first 20 minutes of episode one before I was butt-fucking my cellmate.
Ah, yes.
Tattooing his ass. But obviously it was a huge experience, a huge step into, you know, being a recognizable on-camera actor and great, great work with like an unbelievable cast of,
right,
of
yeah.
New York actors. And
what's the same with Christopher Maloney, right? Is that his name?
Yeah.
I first saw him in that movie Wet Hot American Summer, that weirdo David Wayne summer camp movie,
right?
And he's like, his character, I remember laughing so hard, I was like standing up in the back of the couch because I was like, I couldn't fucking believe how ridiculous this is when this fucking can is talking to him about, it's so funny, it's so weird. And then like, I kind of
I would be reminiscing about how funny that was if I'd seen the movie.
Okay, well, you got, it's great, you got to see it. It's really funny. And like, fast forward a number of years and I see he's like this big time dramatic actor. And I was like, I don't get it. Like, how, wait, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can do.
You can if you're lucky.
Yeah. And because that's what you've done, essentially. You like do all this amazing comedy stuff, but you've also done like some of the most intensely horrifying, terrifying drama that you can possibly do.
Well, and that, you know, that started out when I was doing theater too, because especially after I moved to New York, you know, I was lucky enough to just stumble into the room with a few different casting directors, mm-hmm. you know, who saw me in different ways, you know. So I would go out of town and do a, you know, musical comedy, and then I would go out of town and do a, you know, a Shakespeare comedy, and mm-hmm. then I would go out of town and do some new, you know, Sam Shepard drama, or, you know, whatever. So Man. So I had the opportunity to do a lot of different kinds of things and just learn by doing and develop as an actor and believe in my own the possibilities of my own range, mm-hmm. you know. And then I was also, again, so blessed. Right when I think had just finished the first season of Oz, which is my first really high profile thing, playing this, you know, psychopath Nazi. Then they offered me the job of the shrink on Law and Order.
Okay.
So I'm on network TV playing, you know, the psychiatrist, and I'm on cable playing the psycho. And, you know, I'm the same bald white guy, but, you know, obviously very different characters. Yeah. So that was really huge in me being able to not be typecast. And that really helped me avoid this sort of career where you're the Nazi of the week for the rest of your life, yeah. you know, which would suck. I was anxious to avoid.
Have you ever had any run-ins with people in public who have been like, who couldn't separate TV yeah. from reality and were like.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately it was almost always people who thought Vern Schillinger, my character on Oz, who thought that what he was saying was really awesome.
Oh,
yeah. So it wasn't like people coming up and beating the crap out of me because they were on the other side. It was like people coming up going, right on, man. White power.
Holy shit.
I dig what you're saying. And I would be like, okay.
Is this like in line for the bathroom on an airplane or something creepy like that?
Not that trapped. No, it's just like walking down, you know, Ninth Avenue in New York or something.
Jesus, that's scary as shit.
I'd just be, okay, all right.
Was it ever from someone who like, that's the last guy I'd ever expect to be saying?
No, it was usually like crazy-eyed white guys.
Okay, crazy-eyed white guys with face tattoos?
Some of them. Well, of course, a lot of those guys were actually on the show.
Oh, okay.
The crazy white guys with face tattoos.
Because that's the last job you can get, right? If you get out of prison, you get those tattoos. Like, well, I guess I can play one on TV now. Because I sure as hell can't bag groceries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not without like a ski mask or something. That would be great.
Which is probably a little suspicious.
Why does he have a ski mask on? He's got a lot of tattoos. They're the yeah. You remember that war that happened about 50? Yeah, it's about that. Yeah. He's on the other side. He's on the wrong side of history. Yeah. So do you generally enjoy doing comedy or drama more?
Johnny, I like to do...
that's such a fucking out-of-the-shoebox question right there. Like, Terry Gross would be embarrassed for me right now. Why did you ask him such a simple question as what he prefers, drama or comedy, Johnny?
She did not ask me that question when she interviewed me. Oh. She was probably the second most awesome person to interview me ever. The first being Johnny Pemberton.
Of course, yeah.
Do I like drama? You know what? Honestly, truly, I'm not making this up. I just like to try and do good stuff.
Right.
And if I've done, you know, three comedies in a row, I'm more looking to do a drama.
Right.
And vice versa. But honestly, whether it's a TV pilot or a you know, commercial or a film or a video game, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just looking for good writing.
Yeah, which is hard to find.
It is hard to find, but it's out there, you know.
So is there stuff, have you ever done any of your own stuff and had it produced or, you know?
No, I don't. I'm the least self-motivated person in the world. Being an itinerant, you know, gun-for-hire actor is perfect for me. I mean, I you know, depending on the director I'm working with.
A lot of times that becomes.
Then you get like the Sam Raimi movies that I've done. You know, we always had lots of opportunity to improv and. you know, a fair amount of what you see on the screen is stuff that, that we were just dicking around and, you know, came up with.
Is he the coolest guy?
He is the coolest guy.
Because, like, his movies are always, I don't know how he does it.
Well, first of all, he's from Detroit.
Okay.
Michigan guy. Not even know. And the first time I met him, this is ridiculous. It was right in that time, sort of maybe before Oz. I just started, or about the time, maybe the first season of Oz. And I was just starting to get, you know, some decent auditions for little parts in movies and stuff. And I went in to audition to play the team trainer in the For Love of the Game, the baseball movie with Kevin Costner. And Sam was the director. I didn't know anything about Sam. All I knew was the team was the Detroit Tigers, which was my team. And so I went, I had my Tigers cap and my Tigers jersey, like a nine-year-old moron. And I went to this audition for this two-line part. And Sam, he's a few years younger than I. You know, we're both, you know, we're from the same sort of, you know,
time
gene pool. Yeah.
Thing.
Time place.
Time thing.
And we just started talking about baseball. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to read the whole script, so he was asking my opinion, you know, mm-hmm. which is the kind of guy he is. He would ask the opinion of somebody who's coming into audition for a two-line part.
Wow.
And I was giving it uncharacteristically, you know, sort of bold at the time. And you know, I had some issues with some of the – and I know baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So we were having this great talk about baseball and what makes sense in the screenplay and what, you know, might be kind of pushing it. And we chatted for a while, and it was the first time I'd been in an audition like that with a, you know, big time director, where I just felt like a human being having a conversation with another human being, you know. And he said, "Would you mind taking a look at this other thing and go out in the hall?" And I said, "Sure."
Nice.
And I was like 40 years old at the time, and in really good shape and stuff. And the part was for the manager, who the concept at that time was he was like a 65-year-old white haired Sparky Anderson kind of.
Classic baseball kind of, manager.
Baseball manager in a movie.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I went in and read it, and he went out on a limb and cast me as the manager of the Detroit Tigers, my hometown team, you know.
Oh, man.
And, you know, a month later, I'm shooting in Yankee Stadium wearing the old English D on my chest. It was just unbelievable.
So you definitely are not paying for drinks in Detroit.
No. Although I hardly ever get back there anymore. I don't have any family back there anymore, any friends that I'm even in touch with. But my brother and I go back, used to go back every year. We still go back once in a while and, you know, catch a couple ball games.
And just load up on free stuff.
Yeah, go to Carl's Chop House, which doesn't exist anymore. It's, you know.
Go around with some signed headshots and see how much you can eat for free. Yeah.
It's worth the plane ticket out there just for like the free food and beer.
You bring the plane ticket around, like, who will someone sign up? Will someone, I'll trade you this or co-sign on this or something.
An autographed photo of.
For exactly $642, I will sign this for you.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll return with a conclusion.
Excellent.
It sounds like you're having a really great time listening to Twisting the Wind.
Oh, yeah, I freaking love it.
Oh, in that case, we'd love it if you would donate some of your treasure to us.
Okay.
No blood, just treasure, okay?
Like some money.
Yeah, that would be just great. That's going to allow us to keep making this show.
Oh, yeah, I got
when
that.
When I say us, I mean me and us and all of us together here, okay? Okay.
And we're back here still with J.K. Simmons.
Phew, that was invigorating.
Yeah, what did you think about that, huh? Isn't that crazy?
Dip in the hot tub and everything.
I know. You wouldn't think they could fit it in here, but I guess it was during remodeling, so they craned it in, and next thing you know.
Right, and then when they put the roof back on, it was.
Yeah. It's like, you know those restaurants called, you know, Fazoli's Restaurant?
I do not.
Oh, it's this Italian chain in the Midwest, and they have free breadsticks. And
free breadsticks?
Yeah.
Damn.
They have a panel on the side of the restaurants now, so they can remove people who eat their way in. Who they come in, eat too much, can't get out.
Just kinda, yeah,
can't get out. Have you ever been super fat or never? You've always been
you know what?
A
when
trim
I was
guy.
Doing the movie in the coldest city on the planet,
Winnipeg,
I was 70 pounds heavier than I am now.
70 was that for the part?
I had gotten I've been up and down, you know, a couple times in my life,
but you're a pretty trim guy.
Well, thank you, John.
You're more shit better
I
than
work
I am
out.
You could definitely punch through this wall with my head.
if you want to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because your head is pretty hard.
It's pretty hard, and it's easy to remove, I'm sure, with those muscles.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I had sort of gotten – the first year of Oz was the first time that I was kind of, you know, just had kind of let myself go, and I was a little fat and sloppy. And then I was watching Oz going, really? This
right.
fucking doughboy is the head of the Aryan Brotherhood? So that was my first impetus to, you know, get my ass back into shape. I mean, I was only like 40.
But it was you. It wasn't anyone like, JK, we think you would look
no,
better.
No, it was me and then you know, me and, you know, my wife who was
right.
like, it would be even more fun sleeping with you if you weren't a fat piece of shit, you know?
Right.
And actually that coincided with her getting pregnant for the first time. So she's
wow,
this
so
like
worked.
Little hottie dancer, Broadway chick. And I was this, you know, fat dude, 12 years older than her. And all of a sudden I was becoming Mr. Buff and she was, you know, growing a watermelon.
So she took all your weight and made it into a baby.
Yeah, it was kind of a thing. Yeah. And then, so, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I stayed in pretty good shape. And then we moved out to LA and I started getting fat and lazy again. So it was during that time and during the writer's strike and everything when they asked me to play this part and mm-hmm. the director asked me to put on weight. And I said, no, I'm not going to put on weight because that's dumb. And I'm
right.
40, whatever, 50 probably.
Yeah, it's kind of dangerous. Actually, dangerous.
Yeah. So I said no, like a smart person.
Okay.
And then 2 days later, I, like a stupid person, was thinking, well, you know, writer's strike, holidays are coming up.
Might be a good excuse.
What the hell? I'll go to Fatburger and Mrs. Fields, you know, every day. And that's literally what I did. I didn't have, there was no medical soup. I just ate like a pig
yeah.
and sat on my fat ass.
That's all I want.
And I weighed, my goal was to weigh 250 pounds.
Did you hit it?
And one night, like after eating at night in a hotel in Winnipeg, I stepped on a scale and weighed exactly 250 pounds.
I can just see that scene. It is sad. Like the bad hotel light.
Oh, dude.
The fucking wind whistling outside.
There's no bad hotel like Winnipeg bad hotel.
Yeah. Oh, I can just smell it.
It was.
It's terrifying.
And I was, you know, fat.
Man.
And uncomfortable and like moving was not, and like jiggly and.
Like Sean Penn smoking a cigarette in a bathrobe. Fat. I always think about it. This image was in some magazine from like 15 years ago of a fat Sean Penn smoking a cigarette in a bathrobe. I think it was during...
Like Sean actually fat or...
Like he looked like, I don't know.
Or somebody
I guess,
doctored a photo because, you know, Sean is not the paparazzi's favorite person.
Yeah, I think he was actually kind of fat. He was definitely doughy. This guy was a dough. He was a dough boy. Yeah.
You know he could kick your ass.
I know he would love to kick my ass.
He would really love to kick your ass.
He would kick my ass with his voice. He would just like say like, you little punk, it's too good to bow on that papa.
He would fall down and bleed.
Because he just speaks in weird nonsense words that sound kind of like he's from New York, but really he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like Marlon Brando. It's that actor
Marlon
thing.
Brando.
It's that like cool actor thing.
Yeah, what is that? It's a
he's
weird
voice.
He's
from Nebraska, by the way.
Marlon Brando?
Brando, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No, he's not, is he?
Yeah, he's from Nebraska. Yeah, I'm not lying.
Nebraska.
I don't know why
Jesus
I actually happen to know that because I know less about film than anybody in the universe.
You do?
Yeah.
Why do you think you know so little about film? But you.
Well, because I didn't.
You don't know.
You don't mind
you
if
know.
I clean my teeth on the mic. Yeah.
Oh, we got a rat in here.
Pet peeve. That's on my list of pet peeves.
Rats?
Movie pet peeves. No, the sound effects, they always. You cannot show a rat on film or TV
squeaking.
Without a little fake noise that no rat in the fucking universe has ever made.
Yeah, if they do, it's really sweet sounding. It's like, oh, you're not so bad, are you?
Yeah.
You're really smart.
Yeah. It's like that and when the car pulls out at 4 miles an hour, screech!
Screech,
you know?
Yeah.
One of my post-production sound pet peeves. What were we distracted from by my
I don't know. Rats
peeve?
Being fat.
Being fat, yeah. So yeah. I was big and fat. And unhealthy, and then, of course, we were shooting a movie in Manitoba in the middle of fucking winter. So we were all wearing 75 layers of down anyway. So it didn't matter how fat you were. And I had a full beard, which was like half red, getting to be, you know, probably.
So you could have had a fat suit on.
I could have had a fucking fat suit and a fake beard on and still been kissing my wife when I was at home. But she was like, are you kidding me?
Man.
Fat Santa with the beard and the grossness? You want to?
Yeah. Jeez. So how long did it take you to lose that weight?
Well, a long, long time because I tried losing it in a lot of stupid ways, like starving myself and fasting and cleansing
right.
and this
Ooh,
and
cleansing.
That, which worked great. You know, you drop 20 pounds in a month and then,
but
you know,
it's all
and then go
real.
Back to Fatburger and, you know.
Yeah.
So, So, you know, it was off and on for a few years. It was really 2 years ago that I finally just decided to, again, listen to my wife, mm-hmm. not be a moron, eat less, move more, you know, and
it's so
and
funny how that's what it is. It's just, yeah. Well, how do you lose weight? Well, you eat less of food and you do more moving.
Yeah. And then and you pick up some heavy stuff and yeah. you run and you, and when you eat, a little, you know, a little smarter.
You eat half.
Yeah. Less and, you know, not chocolate chip cookies.
I want very badly to have an excuse to gain weight at some point because I just like.
That's just, well, here's my thing. Do it now. Do it when you're like Robert De Niro, Raging Bull, when he was whatever, 30.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, then? Well, I don't know, 20, whatever the hell he was. Yeah. But he wasn't 50.
Yeah.
You know.
He's not heart attack
putting
range.
On 40 pounds when you're 50 years old.
Is, it may smart. Be the point of no return.
Well, yeah, and I really yeah, thought tough. It was for a long time. But it turns out if you eat less and move more.
You will lose weight.
You can lose weight.
I gained like a small amount of weight, but when I was in New Orleans shooting 21 Jump Street, which was just like, I think something about New Orleans, the air just has like a natural
New Orleans
amount
is
of butter
eating
in the
kind
air.
Of town, man. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You can't not gain weight. And it's something where when I got back to town, I had a fitting for something. I'm like, yeah, I'm a size 32 pants. No, I was not.
Yeah. The last thing I did in New Orleans, no, not the last thing, but a thing I did in New Orleans a few years ago was I was still had most of that fat Manitoba weight.
Right.
And
that's a great thing to
and
call.
I did a movie in New Orleans. Where the world got to see my fatness in a wife beater t-shirt at the end of a movie called when I went to theater and watched it with a friend of mine, he was like, I don't remember if he actually leaned over to me. I think he had the decency to wait until after the movie, but it was towards the end of the movie where my character comes like walking into frame, you know, and I'm in my boxers and my guinea tee, you know, looking bewildered, having been awakened in the middle of the night. And he said, dude, your man boobs came into the frame like 3 seconds before the rest of you. It was awesome.
The focus.
Because all my friends talk like, you know, Keanu Reeves in a surfer movie.
Do you have any weirdo friends who are like that? Who are like weirdo surfer dudes?
Outside of Scott Kahn, no.
Okay.
Not really.
Scott Kahn, James Kahn's.
Yes.
Is that James Kahn's son?
And he is a surfer. Not a weirdo or a dude, actually. Right. But he's the only like surfer friend that I could think of.
There's a lot of people who are surfers who I met who are like, oh, you're a surfer? But wait, you can't.
Yeah, a lot of times it's kind of
How do you do that? Yeah. It looks like you're like kind of normal. And
yeah. Well, with Scott, whatever. It makes sense because he's, you know, like buff, blonde, California kind of dude, you know. But a lot of my other friends who surf, it's like, really? You're like a bald Chinese guy, you know, who doesn't look like he's in very good shape.
He surfs.
Yeah.
So do you miss doing Broadway stuff? Or do you feel like...
Yeah, you know, a little bit sometimes, but mostly it just feels like it was, you know...
It's a chapter that's over?
Yeah. Like the music, the Brahms chapter, you know, the Leonard Bernstein chapter. Yeah, it was a great time, you know, and it was at Broadway at the time, you know... sound like such an old fart, you know. I mean, I felt like my wife and I kind of got out of Broadway at the time when it was really big. Oh, sorry. I gotta take beautiful. This.
Did Ohio State just score? He's got push notifications for all. Oh, they got a safety.
No, they are, the only, well, sorry, one of two undefeated teams really? In major college football.
Who's the other one?
Ineligible for the postseason because some of their guys got free tattoos. Let's not even get started on that.
What
anyway,
does that even mean? Free
you don't want to know. You don't want
to
know.
I went to Florida State where half the starting lineup were criminals.
Yeah.
When
and
I was
taking steroids
there.
And yeah. had houses that the boosters had bought for them.
Yeah, and had like, you know, getting free, like hundreds of dollars of free clothes and stuff. So,
yeah.
It's part of being a college athlete now is being a criminal. Hey, BCS, kiss my ass. Suck my duck. Pac-10.
Pac-10.
They're the worst.
Well, Pac-12.
I don't know what I'm saying right now. I have no idea.
No, I know, and I know you don't, and that's why I find talking with you about sports is
worse. You know, because Lavernius Coles, he's not going to be able to come up once Sebastian Janikowski is kicking 70-yarders. Wow. You got Peter Warwick.
Three names of actual
guys
who at one point were athletes in the public eye.
I have a close friend who is really into fantasy sports, and... Are you into fantasy sports a lot?
No. That's one of the many ways in which I'm a curmudgeon.
Thank God.
I don't think it's curmudgeon. I like to watch baseball and care who wins the game.
But some of that fantasy stuff, it gets to the point where I've heard almost hour-long conversations one side of an hour-long conversation where it is just screaming about, like, that's fucking bullshit. What do you mean? Who said Joe May can trade that guy? Oh. Was he doesn't... It's like, Coach is on the phone right now. Yeah, yeah. Coach is pissed.
It gets... Yeah.
Because, yeah, so I picked up a couple names along the way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you have any... try to finish this off here. I'm trying to think of a...
Let's wrap it up, Johnny.
Let's wrap it up. Do you have any crazy stories from back in the Broadway touring days? Because there must be some crazy shit that happened when you're all over the country.
You know what? Really, by the time I was doing Broadway, you know, I was almost grown up enough not to be doing really crazy stuff.
Really?
You know? Yeah. I mean, I was...
Didn't wake up in the hospital with, like, a catheter?
No, I did do that once, but it was actually more recently, and it was for just purely medical reasons.
Okay.
Which, let's talk about that. Let's talk about my kidney stones for 20 minutes, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because that was a fascinating... Stones. No.
Painful experience.
Nothing is jumping to mind about my wacky Broadway days.
So it was
a good time. I was, you know, I was living on the Upper West Side, and... you know, riding my bike to the theater and doing my show and, you know, hanging out with my friends and playing poker and, you know, dating women and met my wife during my Broadway days. And
were you in the same production together?
We were in a revival of Peter Pan.
Peter Pan. And you were
I was Captain Hook.
Oh, Captain Hook, sorry.
And she was Tiger Lily.
Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
Wait, Tiger Lily is one of the little...
She's the Indian princess.
Okay.
Who was Captain Hook's sworn enemy.
Who was Peter Pan?
Peter Pan was Kathy Rigby.
It's always a lady. Man.
You asked, actually, a friend of mine, an actor friend of mine in New York, Conan McCarty, was one of the few. He did a at the Actors Theater in Louisville, a production of Peter Pan where he played Peter Pan.
That always gets me, man.
An actual male person.
Thank God for him.
Right?
God bless him.
And he's a fine actor as well.
All right, J.K. Simmons, we can find you on Twitter, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. Just tweet me at, I don't know, yourass.com.
At .net/butt.
And make sure and friend me on Fuckbook
and Faceplace. And Nice Town and Wish Buddy
and
all those things.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we can see? I can't wait. I was just about to ask you that question, but I know because the show we did together, we now know is not going to be on until May.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got a little bit of time. Do you have anything you're going to be doing in this nice long hiatus that you're.
No.
No films.
Yeah, no, I got, yeah. I just did reshoots today on a thing that's going to be out next month, I guess. No, February, called Dark Skies.
Dark Skies.
I got a bunch of movies in the can, man. I'm always making movies. Barefoot, that's in the can. Jobs, that's in the can.
Jobs? Is that about Steve?
Steve Jobs.
You
with
play Steve
Ashton
Jobs?
Kutcher. Oh. Play Steve Jobs, who looks frighteningly like him, actually, which had never occurred to me before.
What are you Wozniak in the movie?
I play some rich white dude. What else? Jason Reitman's new movie, Labor Day. I always had to have a tiny part in his
movies.
Yeah,
he loves you, right?
I'm like his good luck charm. Well, he loves me enough to give me like two scenes.
Well, that's great, though. His stuff is always... he does a good job.
He's a fine young filmmaker.
I think
he's going to have a future, that guy.
I think he's got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for getting drunk with me here on a nice Sunday afternoon.
It was awesome, man. Thank you.
Bye, JK.
Bye.
Bye. Look, Mr. Capford, it's been great talking to you, but I really have to go now. I'm getting really hungry. I need to get a snack. I'm going to call you back.
No problem. Send me your email so that I can start the process of your claims, because you don't have much time, like I told you before.
Sounds great. I just got to say thank you. I feel really good being one of the 20 lucky winners, and I really can't wait to get my $4 million and to do good with it. It's going to be great.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations once again from all the members and staff of our company. Meanwhile, like I told you, you have to follow instructions so that your ATM can be delivered to you without any delay.
Okay, I totally will. And I also, when I call back, I would love to talk to some other employees just to say hello. Is that okay?
Yes, get back to me.
I just love talking to people. I love talking. Okay.
You're a big dude. All right.
See you later. Bye.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sure.
See ya. Ciao.
See ya.
Gastro.
Sure.
Bla.
Bye.
Chamo.
No.
Bye. Bro. Bye.
Okay.
Zach.
Okay.
Me.
All right.
Okay.
Give me word to your
bye-bye.
People.
Bye. 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 Bye.
says it's so cold.
Are you fucking serious?
Don't you
fucking
think you're
so cold? Look at me,
so
nauseous. Now you think so.
I can smell it.
As a branch of the United States government.
As a branch of the United States government, it is the mission of the National Security Agency to assess and flag citizens of the country who may present a threat to its security. The NSA has clearance to wiretap by any means necessary.
Tapped. Incidental recordings of private conversations from the files of the NSA.
Now on feralaudio.com.